It is still dark when a driver slows on the shoulder of a Michigan highway. Headlights catch something that does not belong there, a body. A young woman lies near the edge of the pavement, motionless, exposed to passing traffic and cold air. Police arrive within minutes. They shut down lanes. They mark the asphalt. They confirm what no one wants to say out loud. Ruby Garcia is dead. She is 25 years old. She has been shot. There is no weapon at the scene. No clear sign of where the shooting happened, just a body left where someone wanted it found or wanted it gone. Within hours, investigators face two problems. One is forensic. Where did this begin and how did it end here? The other will grow much larger, much faster. A suspect emerges and details outside the crime itself begin to pull the case into a national storm. Before the headlines, before the arguments, there is a single question that matters. Who killed Ruby Garcia? And why was her life reduced to a crime scene on the side of the road? Chapter 1, The Discovery. The call comes in just after dawn. A driver reports something on the shoulder of the highway, south of Grand Rapids. At first, it is described as debris. Then the word changes. A body. State police arrive to find a young woman lying near the edge of the pavement. Traffic is still light, but cars are already passing at full speed. Red and blue lights flood the roadway. Cones go down. Flares follow, one lane is shut, then another. The woman is later identified as Ruby Garcia. She is 25 years old. She is wearing casual clothes, not dressed for cold weather. Her shoes are still on. Her phone is missing. There is no purse nearby. No vehicle stopped close enough to explain how she got there. A trooper checks for a pulse. There is none. A medic confirms death minutes later. The first visual assessment suggests a gunshot wound. No weapon is visible. No shell casings are immediately found on the shoulder. The asphalt is dry. The surrounding grass shows no obvious signs of a struggle. The location raises immediate questions. This stretch of highway is not well lit. There are no nearby businesses open at that hour. No houses within easy walking distance. It is not a place someone would choose to stop unless something had gone wrong. Investigators begin working the scene in layers. One team focuses on traffic control and safety. Another starts documenting the body's position. Measurements are taken from the shoulder to the center line. Photos capture the angle of her arms, the placement of her legs, the direction her head is turned. There is blood, but not as much as expected. That detail matters. It suggests the possibility that Ruby Garcia was shot somewhere else. If she had been shot and killed on the shoulder, there would likely be more blood pooled on the asphalt or soaked into the grass. Instead, what is visible looks consistent with a body that was moved after death or after serious injury. A forensic unit arrives and begins a slower, more careful sweep. Flashlights scan the roadside. The grass is combed inch by inch. The ditch is checked. Nothing turns up. No casings, no weapon, no obvious personal items. That absence becomes the first major problem in the case. If this was not the primary scene, then the real crime happened somewhere else. That means evidence could be lost. It also means someone made a decision to transport a body. That decision suggests intent, panic, or both. By mid-morning, the area is fully secured. A tent is erected over the body to shield it from traffic and cameras. The medical examiner is notified. The body will be transported for autopsy, but only after every possible detail is recorded. Troopers speak to the driver who made the call. He says he thought he saw an animal at first. Then he realized it was a person. He did not see anyone else nearby. No vehicles were stopped on the shoulder when he passed the first time. When he came back, emergency lights were already visible in the distance. Other drivers are canvassed. A few recall seeing a dark vehicle parked briefly earlier in the night. None can give a clear description. No license plates. No confirmed time. Investigators pull traffic camera data from nearby interchanges. They begin reviewing hours of footage. Cars blur past in steady streams. Headlights, taillights. Most of it will lead nowhere, but every gap matters. Every unexplained stop matters. As the body is prepared for transport, officers notice additional details. Ruby Garcia has no visible defensive injuries on her hands, no torn clothing, no signs of a prolonged struggle. That does not rule out violence, it only suggests speed. The gunshot wound is confirmed during the preliminary exam. The exact caliber is not yet known. The bullet is believed to still be inside the body, which means ballistics may eventually provide answers. For now, it confirms homicide. The question shifts from what happened to where it happened. Back at headquarters, detectives begin building Ruby Garcia's last known hours. They notify her family. The news is delivered carefully, but it still lands like a blow. She was not missing. No one was looking for her yet. Now she is gone. Family members describe her as close, reliable, someone who checked in regularly. She had plans, she had routines. That makes the sudden silence harder to explain. Investigators request phone records. They look for her last pings. Without the phone itself, they rely on carrier data. Towers show her device moving during the night, but the final signal cuts off hours before her body is found. That gap becomes another problem. If the phone was turned off or destroyed, it suggests someone took steps to limit tracking. If it simply died, then timing becomes critical. Either way, the phone is now a key piece of missing evidence. As word of the discovery spreads locally, rumors begin to surface. Some are harmless, others are not. Law enforcement is careful with what they release. They confirm her identity. They confirm a gunshot wound. They say the investigation is active. They do not speculate. Behind the scenes, pressure builds quickly. A young woman shot and left on a highway draws attention. It raises fear, it raises anger, it raises questions about safety, about violence, about who might be responsible. Detectives review missing persons reports. None match. They review recent domestic calls linked to Ruby Garcia. There are none on record. They review social media. Posts show a normal life, smiles, friends, no obvious signs of distress. That normalcy makes the crime harder to place. By the end of the first day, the case is already defined by what is missing. No weapon, no phone, no confirmed crime scene, no clear timeline, only a body where it should not be. The highway is reopened by afternoon. Traffic resumes. Cars pass over the same stretch of asphalt where Ruby Garcia was found hours earlier. Most drivers do not know what happened there. Others will never forget it. Investigators return to their desks with boxes of photos, notes, and unanswered questions. They know the next phase will determine everything. Find the place where the shooting occurred, and the case moves forward. Fail to find it, and the trail grows cold fast. For now, one fact is certain. Ruby Garcia did not die by accident. Someone pulled a trigger. Someone decided to leave her where she would be found. The rest is still in the dark. Chapter 2, The Investigation. By the second day, the case has a name inside the department. Not a suspect's name. Not yet. It is called a relocation homicide. A killing where the body is not found where the violence occurred. Those cases are harder. Evidence scatters. Time works against you. Detectives start with Ruby Garcia herself. Not just who she was, but how she lived. Patterns matter. Habits matter. Anything out of place can point to the last hours before her death. They build a timeline from the ground up, work schedule, social plans, messages sent and received, where she was seen, who she was with, who she trusted. Friends say Ruby was social but careful. She did not vanish without telling someone. She checked in, she answered calls. That makes the silence before her body was found stand out. Investigators interview coworkers. No one noticed unusual behavior. She did not leave work upset. She did not mention plans that sounded risky. Her routine had not recently changed. That narrows the window. Phone records arrive in stages. Tower data shows movement during the night, but it is imprecise. Signals jump between locations. It confirms travel but not intent. The phone goes dark hours before the body is discovered. Whether it was powered off, destroyed, or removed cannot yet be determined. That missing phone becomes the center of the investigation. Without it, detectives cannot read messages, track GPS history, or confirm last contacts. Whoever has it, if anyone does, holds leverage over the truth. Attention turns to vehicles. If Ruby Garcia did not walk to the highway, she was driven. That means a car, a truck, something with wheels carried her there. The lack of tire marks near the body suggests she was not dragged far. She was likely placed close to where the vehicle stopped. Traffic cameras are reviewed again, this time with narrower focus. Investigators isolate the time window between the last phone signal and the discovery. Hours of footage are compressed into minutes of interest. They look for anomalies, vehicles stopping where they should not, sudden lane changes, headlights that pause on the shoulder. One dark vehicle appears briefly in the window. It does not stay long. It does not have identifying features clear enough for immediate confirmation. Still, it becomes a lead. Witnesses are recontacted. One recalls seeing a car pulled over earlier in the night. Another remembers hearing something loud, but cannot say when or what it was. Memory degrades fast. Detectives know that. Ballistics results come back next. The medical examiner recovers a bullet during the autopsy. It is intact enough for analysis. The caliber is identified. The wound path confirms the shot was fatal and likely delivered at close range. There are no signs of multiple shots. One trigger pull, one outcome. That matters. It suggests either precision or familiarity. This was not random firing. It was deliberate. There is no evidence of prolonged restraint, no binding marks, no injuries consistent with extended assault. That points toward a brief, violent encounter rather than hours of captivity. Investigators revisit the question of where the shooting occurred. They begin canvassing locations within the last known phone signal range, parking lots, side roads, private driveways, areas where a gunshot might not draw attention late at night. They look for fresh disturbances, tire tracks, blood traces, cleaning attempts. Most searches turn up nothing. Then a small detail shifts focus. A witness mentions a vehicle parked in an unusual spot earlier in the evening, not near the highway, but within the signal range. The location is checked. It is not public. It is not busy. It would offer privacy. Investigators process the area. They do not find blood in obvious quantities, but they do find indications of recent activity. Footprints, disturbed gravel. Nothing definitive yet, but enough to justify deeper scrutiny. At the same time, detectives begin reviewing Ruby Garcia's personal connections. They are careful here. The goal is facts, not assumptions. They speak with friends, acquaintances, people she spent time with recently. They ask about arguments, conflicts, concerns. Nothing immediate surfaces. Then a name begins to appear more than once. Not from gossip, from records, from overlapping timelines, from phone data that intersects before the device goes dark. The individual is not identified publicly. Inside the investigation, the focus tightens. Detectives pull background information, prior contacts with law enforcement, known addresses, vehicle registration, employment records. Everything must be verified. They do not rush. In relocation homicides, mistakes early on can collapse cases later. Evidence must line up, timelines must agree, motive must be grounded in fact, not convenience. They attempt to locate the missing phone through secondary means, carrier pings, network logs. No success. If the device is powered off or shielded, it will stay silent. That silence becomes louder. As days pass, public attention increases. Tips come in. Many are vague. Some are emotionally driven. A few are useful. One tip confirms seeing Ruby Garcia with someone fitting the emerging suspect profile earlier in the night. Another places a similar vehicle near the location investigators are already examining. Individually, these details mean little. Together, they form direction. Detectives begin formal interviews with the person of interest. Not an arrest, not a confrontation, a conversation. The answers are cautious. Some details match known facts, others do not. Timelines shift slightly, locations blur. It is not proof of guilt, it is inconsistency. Investigators document everything. They compare statements to data, camera footage, phone records, witness accounts. Small contradictions start to stack. None are decisive on their own. In combination, they raise concern. The ballistics unit checks databases for matching weapons. No immediate hits. That does not eliminate anything. Many firearms are unregistered or privately transferred. The weapon remains missing. As the investigation moves forward, detectives prepare for the next step. Not action, but confirmation. They need enough verified evidence to justify escalation. Anything less risks losing the case entirely. By the end of the second week, the picture is clearer, but still incomplete. Ruby Garcia's final hours involve someone she knew or trusted enough to be with. The shooting likely happened away from the highway. The body was moved deliberately. The phone was removed for a reason. A suspect has emerged, but the case cannot yet speak publicly. Not until facts replace suspicion. The pressure now is internal. Get it right. Do not miss anything. Do not let outside noise dictate pace. Because once the next move is made, there is no pulling it back. And everyone involved knows it. Chapter 3, The Arrest and Aftermath. The decision is made quietly. There is no press release, no early warning. By the time the warrant is signed, most of the work is already done. Detectives have aligned the timeline as tightly as it will go. Statements have been checked and rechecked. Physical evidence, while limited, now points in one direction strongly enough to act. The arrest comes without drama. officers locate the suspect at a known address. He does not run, he does not resist, he is taken into custody and transported without incident. The charge is read, open murder. For investigators, this is not the end. It is the point of no return. Inside the booking area, the suspect's information is logged. Name, age, address history, prior contacts, everything is verified against court records and databases. This is where facts matter most. Anything released publicly must be accurate. Anything misstated will be used later to discredit the case. The charging documents outline what investigators believe happened. Ruby Garcia spent time with the suspect during the night. At some point, she was shot. The exact location of the shooting is still under investigation, but evidence suggests it did not occur on the highway. After the shooting, her body was transported and left along the shoulder. Her phone was removed and has not been recovered. The documents do not speculate about motive. They do not describe emotion. They describe actions. The first court appearance follows quickly. The suspect stands before a judge. The charge is read again. Bond is addressed. The seriousness of the offense leaves little room for discretion. He is held. Only after the arrest is confirmed do law enforcement agencies address a question they know is coming. The suspect's immigration status. This information is verified through official records. It is not assumed. It is not inferred. It is confirmed through federal documentation. Investigators are careful to state only what is established fact. Nothing more. Within hours, that fact moves beyond the case file. National attention arrives fast and loud. The focus shifts from a homicide investigation to a broader argument that has little to do with Ruby Garcia herself. Cable news panels begin discussing policy. Social media fills with opinions. The case is pulled into a debate that investigators did not invite and cannot control. For Ruby's family, the shift is jarring. They release a brief statement through their attorney. They ask for privacy. They ask that the focus remain on Ruby, not politics. They describe her as a daughter, a sister, a friend, a person, not a headline. Their words are clear, but they struggle to compete with the noise. Law enforcement responds with restraint. Officials reiterate the facts of the case. They confirm the charge. They decline to engage in policy discussion. They emphasize that the investigation was conducted based on evidence, not status. Behind closed doors, the work continues. Prosecutors begin preparing the case for court. They review every report, every interview, every lab result. They know the defense will challenge the investigation aggressively. They know outside attention raises the stakes. Any error will be magnified. The missing phone remains a problem. Its absence is addressed directly. Prosecutors prepare to explain why a case can proceed without it. They rely on corroborating evidence, witness timelines, statements, physical findings, circumstantial links that, taken together, form a narrative a jury can understand. Ballistics experts finalize their reports. While the weapon has not been recovered, the bullet provides enough information to establish the cause of death clearly. The medical examiner's conclusions are firm. Ruby Garcia died from a gunshot wound. The manner of death is homicide. Investigators also prepare for questions they cannot yet answer. Where exactly did the shooting happen? Where is the gun? Where is the phone? They are honest about what is known and what is still under investigation. Uncertainty is acknowledged, not hidden. That transparency is deliberate. It is also necessary. As the case moves forward, the department assigns additional resources to manage threats and harassment. Online rhetoric has consequences. Some are directed at officers, others at the family. None of it helps. Local community leaders call for calm. Vigils are held for Ruby Garcia. Candles are lit, flowers are placed. In those moments, the case feels smaller, more human. For investigators who worked the scene on the highway, the memory does not fade. They remember the quiet before sunrise, the body where it did not belong, the questions that followed. They know that even with an arrest, justice is not guaranteed. Trials are unpredictable, juries are human. The burden of proof is high, and it should be. What matters now is that the process holds. That the case remains grounded in evidence, that Ruby Garcia's death is not reduced to a talking point, that the courtroom, not the airwaves, determines responsibility. As weeks pass, filings continue, motions are submitted, hearings are scheduled. The pace slows, as it always does once the case leaves the street and enters the system. For the family, the waiting begins again. This time, it is measured in months, not hours. They attend court dates. They hear details they wish they did not know. They carry a loss that does not lessen with attention. Outside, the national debate moves on, as it always does. Another story takes its place. Another argument fills the screen. But the case remains. In Michigan, a young woman was killed. Her body was left on the side of a highway. An arrest was made based on evidence, not rhetoric. The rest will be decided in court. That is where Ruby Garcia's story now belongs. Not as a symbol, not as a weapon in a larger fight, but as a victim whose life ended violently and whose death demands accountability, quietly and completely under the rule of law.